This is the Bigger Pockets podcast.
That's what I'm talking about. You guys, that's my mom.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Josh's mom.
This is the Bigger Pockets podcast, show 206.
From there, I sort of steamrolled, and in the last 10 months, since that first property, I've done 22.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Brandon Turner. What's going on, man?
Look who's back, Josh Dorkin, after leaving almost, what, 3 weeks, a month?
Well... It's been a very difficult few weeks.
Yeah, everything good now?
Well, first off, thank you to Dave and Mindy and Brandon, you guys, for holding down the fort. Basically, we had some family stuff going on. My dad got very sick and had to have some emergency heart surgery. And, you know, the doctors really saved his life. You know, it wasn't looking good, and they came in and did magic, and he's still recovering right now. But yeah, I've been out dealing with family things and helping out. And yeah, well, first, you know, thank you to everybody who's listening, who has been supportive. And this has been a tough time, very, very, very difficult time. And I do appreciate all the support that I have gotten, although I think this is the most public I've gone about the situation. Big thanks to everybody. It's been rough. It's been rough on everybody. And, you know, my job has really been to be supportive to my family and be there for my mom and, you know, help out advocating for my dad and everybody else. So thanks to everybody. But we are back today. We have an unbelievable show. Again, I heard the last couple of shows have been fantastic. People really liked Mindy and Dave, and you know, I don't know. I'm a little offended. I'll be honest.
They're good hosts. I stayed co-host. They took over host. You know, I don't want to step on your toes. So, you know, it was good shows. They even let me, Mindy. Oh, Mindy didn't let me.
Mindy didn't let me.
Yeah.
She let you.
Then she interrupted me. And then Dave let me do the intro of one of the shows. It was pretty remarkable.
We love those guys. Those guys are going to be filling in. You know, give Brandon and I breaks when we need it. You know, we've heard great things about. We know they're awesome, but you know, you guys have really loved them, so we're really pleased. Anyway, we got a great show today. Very, very exciting show with a fantastic guest. This guy started investing while active duty in the military, and in very short time, in 2 years, has done some incredible stuff. In the last year alone, he's renovated, rehabbed like 21 properties. It's remarkable how he did it, how he came to it. Really, really cool. So we'll get into that. But before we do, why don't we get to today's quick tip.
All right, today's quick tip. So you might be listening to this after Christmas, because this show does come out a couple of days before Christmas. My quick tip today is, you know, at Christmas dinner or when you're with family and friends hanging out, like, don't be afraid to talk a little bit about your real estate investing. And I say that because a couple of reasons. One, you never know if one of your family members maybe someday wants to partner with you, or maybe wants to be a private lender, or more likely, maybe they know somebody who, hey, you know, I got this guy at work who's actually been talking about real estate, or I got my cousin does it, you know, whatever. It's a good time just to kind of bring that up. I mean, don't dominate conversations, but don't be afraid to talk a little bit about your real estate. You never know where it might lead you.
Yeah. And you could even do that during Hanukkah dinner or
you could doing
it. Perhaps like your Festivus celebration, perhaps.
My Festivus. I don't even know what that is, but I'm going to,
Should I know
what that is?
I'm a little disappointed. Yeah, it's a Seinfeld reference.
I was going to say, I think that was Seinfeld. I just thought it was something like that.
Yeah, Seats of Strength. Come on, Festivus for the rest of us. All right, never mind.
All right, well, anyway, that was a quick tip. So,
all right, guys, so this is show 206 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. You can check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show206.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP.
You guys, for Christmas, I want one thing from you. If you have not yet left us a rating and review on iTunes, please take 5 minutes, jump on iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. Those things really, really help us. Subscribe to the show if you're not doing so already. And lastly, share it. If you're listening to this podcast, if you listen to more than 5 episodes, it means you kind of like what we're doing here. Let people know. Post the link, biggerpockets.com/podcast on Facebook, on Twitter, to your friends and family. Share it to people. Let people know that this is a great show. Help us to grow the show. Help us to educate more real estate investors and get more people successful. Help us out if you could. We really would appreciate that.
Yeah, we would. All right, should we get into this?
Let's do this.
Let's do it.
All right, guys. Today's show is with special guests. They're all special. But today's special guest is Joseph England. Joe England, like I said, real estate investor from the Baltimore area. Joe's only 32 years old, full-time active duty member of the U.S. Army, and has been for the last 11 years. He's deployed over 10 times to countries in Africa, Asia, and Europe, and he is now having massive success in his real estate investing career. He's a good guy. He's got a great story, and he's got a great why. He's got an unbelievable why. So stay tuned, listen up, and let's hear from Joe. All right, Joe, welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Great, great. Yeah. So we're talking about your story. You actually came to us here. You came to our attention, I guess, because I'm getting there.
Joe, I know I've been gone from the show for like 2 weeks.
You've been gone for like forever. But we had a great time without you.
Hasn't been around here. Let's get this thing going.
3 weeks, actually. Right. 3 weeks in a row.
Has it been 3 weeks?
It has been 3 weeks. It's been really sad. Yeah, I know. Well, you're back, sadly. So let's get to this thing. All right.
You probably didn't miss you.
Can I ask you a question?
I did not. Yeah. Okay. Ask him a question, sure. And then let me get to my question. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Brandon.
All right, so my question is, okay, so you came to our attention because on the forums you wrote kind of a success story, and it was amazing. Yes. And so that's what we're talking about today, kind of like how you got started, where you came from. I think it should be kind of fun. So why don't we just start at the very, very, very beginning. Who are you, and how'd you get into real estate?
So I'm 32 years old. I've been in the military for 11 years now.
And you look it. You look it.
What's that?
You look it.
Well, I know.
Like,
Are you going to challenge him to fight, Brandon?
I would never challenge. Can you give me can you flex just like to the camera?
It's not impressive. It's actually
it is impressive.
Look at that. Dude, yeah. Okay, everybody. His biceps are larger than my waist. So.
All right. So you've been in the military. All right.
Yeah. And my job within the military is always, I deploy a lot, and I've been deployed over 10 times to Africa, Asia, Europe, places like that. And when I'm not deployed, well, I guess a combination of deployments and trips away, I'm usually gone 9 months out of the year. So I pretty much had every excuse in the book not to start real estate, because I've always wanted to begin in real estate. And about a little over two and a half years, it was the summer of 2014. I was in a school for 4 months down in Florida, and the whole ISIS thing had kicked off in Iraq. Yep. And I got notified that when I got back, I was going to be on standby for deployment to go to Iraq, as far as the people that were going back to Iraq is in response to that incident. So, and at that point, I had lived in my apartment for 2 years in Baltimore City that I'd planned just to live there for a year. And, I guess 2.5 years later, I was still living there and hadn't bought a house. And this thing came up, and I was like, before I'd heard about the Iraq thing, I had every intention to go home and start my search for my house. And then this came up, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll push it off again. I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to do this. So started searching, was able to finally find a house. But at that point, when I got a house under a contract, I was notified that I was leaving 2 weeks later. So this was the middle of November. So instead of, letting that deter me, I set up a bunch of power of attorneys and got my dad to basically buy the house while I was in Iraq, and ended up closing on it in, I think, either end of January 2015 or early February. And then I had arranged for two roommates to move in before I even came home, and was already house hacking before I even stepped into the house.
That's awesome.
So that was the start of my first property purchase.
Okay.
As far as the investment portion, I always knew I wanted to, but sort of like an interesting thing is, like, about a week before I was supposed to leave for the deployment, I fell asleep watching TV, and suddenly I woke up and there was a infomercial for Yancey Real Estate and going to one of their like guru seminars. And I've never called, an infomercial in my life, but I decided, what the hell? So I called this thing 3:30 in the morning, decided to go. Went there, and it was very, obvious, the stories they tell the gurus. There's people, obviously, implants, actors, but it still kind of sparked an idea in both me and my partner, who had went at the time. And so we then got introduced to Bigger Pockets, and then I left on this deployment a week later. And then, I was working average like 15-hour days, 7 days a week. But the few hours that I had free time, I would spend that either listening to a Bigger Pockets podcast or some book that, on the Bigger Pockets, I guess, reading list.
Sure.
So
that's awesome.
Nice. Hey, I want to go back really quick, because you had talked about power of attorney. For those people who don't understand or know what that is, can you just explain really quickly?
So because I wasn't able to be there and physically be able to sign, in order for someone else to sign for me, and especially because there's a little more red tape involved because it was a VA loan, that someone actually had to sign for me and physically be there. So my father, who actually lives in Lakewood, Washington, came all the way out and signed for me in my stead. And that's what the power attorney was giving him, power to sign for me.
Right on.
That's awesome. Well, what I love about that is, like, you kind of mentioned already, you had like every reason not to get involved with real estate, because you're like, well, I'm in the military, I'm going to be traveling a lot, I better not. Or most people out there probably would not have done it anyway. But I just love the fact that you're like, I'm going to do it anyway. And then when you ran across the difficulty, instead of again saying, okay, well, let's just forget it, I'm leaving in 2 weeks anyway, you found a way to make it happen. And I just hope that's a lesson to everyone listening to this, is like, no matter what excuse you think you have for why now is not a good time to do it, and maybe you'll just do it later, like, there's no time like the present, right?
Yeah. And I'm the master of making excuses, because I made excuses for years. For the longest time, the majority of my free time was spent playing video games or going out and drinking and, living the nightlife, I guess. And
sure,
decided it was time to be serious.
Makes sense. There you go. So anyway, so you started learning about real estate, watching the late night infomercials, and found Bigger Pockets, started listening to this and reading books and all that good stuff. Just out of curiosity, when you were starting, what books did you read? Like, what were the big books back then that got you kind of excited?
This was 15, right? January 2015?
Yeah, Yeah, it's okay. About January 2015. Well, first was The Beginner's Guide to Beginner's Ultimate.
Nice.
The
Ultimate Beginner's Guide to Real Estate Investing by Josh Dorkin and Brandon Turner.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. I did not ask you that because I knew you were going to say that. I just asked you because I was actually curious, but that's awesome. Yeah. Okay, anyway, what else?
And then from there, I went to, because I always, you know, liked the idea of rehabbing, because when I was in college, I ended up becoming an apprentice carpenter to help rebuild my sister's roof.
Oh,
and,
nice.
You know, who builds a flat roof in Lakewood, Washington? But apparently she bought the only flat roof in Washington, and we spent 6 months building it, only to find out the guy who had written the plans had, I guess, put the trusses backwards, and then it was not to code, and they had to tear it back down and end up paying some other contracting company to do it anyways.
Yeah, good lesson learned, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, flat roofs out here, not a good idea.
Yeah. All right, so we've got this first deal. You've gone, you bought it, your dad took care of all the business. You come back, you've got these two roommates who are in there, and you're making money off of it, I'm assuming, at this point, by the time you get back from your deployment, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So actually the investment part actually started while I was in Iraq. So at that point, I had decided to partner up with my girlfriend at the time. But so we basically developed a plan. And she is actually a diplomat in the Department of State. And she was actually stationed in Jamaica when we decided to start this venture together.
Nice.
So we together through, you know, Skype and all, you know, communication and our few hours that we had apart, you know, being in different time zones, we basically organized our plan to hit, as soon as I got back the week, that we were going to have properties ready to go and look at, and we wanted to start our investment career as soon as possible. So I lived in Baltimore, so we picked out a few areas, and we ended up using my real estate agent that used to buy my original house, and she ended up working out amazing, still my main real estate agent to this day, and it's just awesome. So we basically ended up having like a good 30, 40 houses that we wanted to look at. And much to the dismay of my real estate agent, we saw those probably in the first 2 weeks, like every single one, because I didn't know really quite what I was doing other than what I'd read, you know, from Jay Scott's book and, you know, other stuff like that. But from there, we basically ended up putting an offer on every single house, minus like the few that had like foundational problems. And just, you know, one of our, I guess, way behind how we do offers is one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was when putting an offer, if you're not embarrassed by your offer, it's too high.
Yeah.
So we frequently were putting in these extremely embarrassing low offers. And, you know, of course, most were rejected. Yep. Most were like, you know, but, you know, there were a few that actually came back and you were able to instantly tell who was serious and who wasn't, you know, who's motivated. Yeah. And we were able to after a few weeks, we got one property under contract. And then a few days later, we got a second one. And then about a month later, we actually found a third property on Craigslist, which ended up being our first sort of property in a Section 8 house. We bought it for $35,000. This is a rehab. This is like a turnkey itself. $35,000, and it rents for $1,000 a month.
Wow. That's awesome.
So you bought basically three, you came home.
Three in a month, right? You had three deals.
Yeah, three, probably a month, month and a half.
That's awesome.
So the first one, the second and third one were turnkeys. The first one needed work, and I ended up doing the work myself.
Okay.
And then, you know, obviously you can see the appreciation that you got from doing the rehab yourself. And then from there is basically when I decided that I no longer wanted to buy turnkeys. I didn't want to pay for anybody else's, you know, rehab profits. You know, I wanted those to be mine. So basically then we kind of took a break for like 6 months. And then, you know, around like Christmas time, I started looking at more distressed properties because I came up with the idea that I wanted to just rehab properties, wanted to do the BRRRR strategy, I wanted to flip. And I started looking at more houses, doing the same process, and got a house under contract, closed on my first distressed property January of 2016. And from there, it sort of steamrolled. And in the last 10 months, since that first property, I've done 22.
Whoa.
Wow. Oh, my God. You've done 22 units or 22 properties?
22 properties. They're all individual single-family houses.
Were those all flips?
They're all rehabs in some form. I take that back. One of them, we ended up buying one other turnkey. It just ended up being this really good property with this high-paying renter in it. And we were just, okay, well, threw down another conventional loan on that in the midst of these. So there were 21 rehabs.
Hey, so, Joe, I got a couple questions on this.
Yeah.
So first, you're saying the word turnkey. Can you define it as you're saying it? Because I think there's various interpretations of what a turnkey property is. And so I just want people to understand specifically how you're defining it.
Yeah. So my definition of a turnkey is a house that is already rehabbed and ready to go and basically rent ready.
Okay.
You don't need to really do much work to it. You know,
somebody did the work already.
Yeah. Somebody already did the work. So that is my definition of a turnkey.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. How, 22 properties over the course of a year, were they all in distressed neighborhoods, that $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 price range, or, did it vary?
Actually, it varied greatly. So my first house is in the kind of like A-class neighborhood, Baltimore City, known as Canton. It was valued at over $400,000. And then I would say majority of my properties is sort of like a B-class, B-minus kind of class, where the ARV is around $150,000. And so majority of them, we would buy them for $50,000 to $60,000, maybe $65,000, rehab them for about $30,000, maybe a little bit more depending on the property. And then we would then either flip or refinance out of them. And the ARV would generally be around $150,000. So like the lowest one was like $144,000. We had one go up to $160,000 for a flip. So
okay.
And then we've got a number of them in also the distressed areas, probably have about a 7 in the kind of the Section 8 neighborhood specifically. It's actually in the same neighborhood we bought the first house from Craigslist. They're all within a 2-block radius of that house.
So 22 properties in a year, not even a year, what are we at, 11 months is considerable. You know, you're a guy who's out of the military. I hope don't come jump through the screen and hurt me. But, you know, I'm assuming you're not loaded. And so my question is, how are you financing, you know, how'd you end up financing 22 properties over the course of the last year? I mean, it seems like a lot. I'm assuming you did some creative stuff in order to get to the point where you can really start to scale it. So I'd love to hear that story.
Yeah. So we used all sorts of different type of financing. And actually, of the 22, we've had a number of properties under contract, but there's never been a property that we had to forgo due to financing. Every single property that we've gotten, we've been able to find financing. And almost majority of them, we didn't have financing secured when the contract was ratified. So I kind of almost finds a little, I wouldn't recommend that for beginners, but it's an extra motivation. But if it's a good property, the money is there. So my very first rehab property, me and my partner, we didn't have money really. I had a number of investments that I had accrued over, the 11 years. Well, they weren't doing very well in the stock market. And so I decided to liquefy my entire non-retirement investment account, which actually paid for the purchase and the rehab of my first actual rehab property. Then I ended up refinancing out of that, getting my money back. And then for the second property, while the first one was still going on, I was able to find private financing through a guy who I actually served in the military with. He actually flips houses, and we were really good friends. And so he'd been doing it for years, and we sort of started doing a partnership where he would help me find the money and the financing for a few of the properties. But, he only had a limited number of private lenders. So then on my third property, I used a hard money lender. On my fourth property, I used a combination of a private money lender and a hard money lender. And then ever since then, it's been a combination of that, pretty much private money, hard money, and my own money to finance every single property.
It's fantastic.
I love that creativity. I love just, you're figuring out, people always want to know about creative finance. Like, what's the best way to finance a deal? And like the way that you're kind of saying it, exactly what I found is like every deal is different. You just figure it out. You put together a little bit of this strategy, a little bit of this one, a little bit of this one, and you kind of put it all together and it makes the financing work. And it's kind of cool to hear your story of that.
Yeah. There's a funny joke that me and my partner made the other day, just in kind of relation to this. And, real estate's kind of like an accidental pregnancy. At the end of the day, you'll figure it out, or you'll end up on Team Mom, or maybe.
Whoopsie.
I love that. It is kind of like, right? It's like, oopsie. Well, now I got it. I better figure out how to make this work. Like, it's very true, and it's stressful sometimes. And sometimes you end up on MTV. you look kind of stupid, but
Brandon, is that how you got on TV?
That's right there. I was on Teen Mom.
Or even worse, the BP podcast.
Yeah, even worse.
Or even worse. Ouch, Joe. Hey, Brandon, we've got to go. We're having technical difficulties.
I think we are. All right. No, I love that. You know, one thing I talk, I mentioned in the book on investing in real estate with No One Low Money Down is that real estate is a lot like a toolbox, right? So if you have like one tool in that toolbox, you can do like imagine you wanted to go build a house, but all you have is a hammer. You couldn't do it. But if you have a hammer and a saw, now you can do a little bit more. Hammer, saw, screwdriver, now you can do more. Basically, the more tools you have in your toolbox, the bigger projects you can take on. So that's what creative finance is like, right? Just get as many tools, you know, metaphorically speaking, in your head as you can get. Figure out, how does hard money work? How does private money work? How does, you know, house hacking work? How does all this stuff work? And then when you have a deal, you just figure it out. You put together what you know, and you can take on some pretty cool projects.
Exactly.
That's awesome. All right. So go ahead, Josh. You were.
No, I was going to
jump in at the bit.
No, I'm not jumping. I'm not jumping at anything. Relax. All right. So back to these 22 deals. That's a lot of work. I mean, that averages out to, you know, about a little less than two per month. How are you crewing these rehabs up? Do you have one team? Do you have multiple teams that are working on multiple projects at the same time? What does your infrastructure look like?
So originally I started on the first rehab. I didn't have a GC at the time. I purchased the house and I actually even closed on it before I even had a general contractor. But on my very first property, I had, I think it was six different general contractors that I'd gotten references from to come out and do a bid. And, you know, we had bids, I think it was like 16,000 all the way up to 50,000 for the exact same scope of work that I had put up. And, you know, a lot you can tell from general contractors, you know, when doing the bidding process is one, you know, their price, and two, how long it takes them to get it back to you. You know, the one guy who came at 50,000, like took almost 2 weeks to get it back to me. But the guy I ended up going with who bid the property, I think for 23,000, which is what I am going with, he did it in 2 days. And he actually is still my main general contractor and actually my pseudo project manager to help supervise other general contractors we've brought on board. Nice. So
I think that's a great tip is the contractors that get back to you fairly quickly. Like in what I'm thinking just in my past few years, those are the guys that I end up using a lot more as well. It's like they're responsible enough to get you back a bid. They're probably responsible enough to manage their time to do a flip as well or to do a rehab.
Now, what of the idea that those guys are getting back because nobody wants to hire them or because, I mean, that's look, there's different ways to look at it, right?
Yeah. Sure. At the end of the day, it's a business. And if you really want, you know, my business, you're going to, you know, you're going to put some effort into it and get off your ass. So
there you go.
Brandon, get off your ass.
I'm trying.
But it started with one. And then over time, through this whole process, we've created new problems. And, you know, and one of my favorite books, you know, the 10X rule by Grant Cardone, he says you can measure success by creating new problems. And we, you know, then created, we then had so many houses, but we didn't have enough general contractors. So then we found more general contractors, and then we had so many properties and so many general contractors that we were then running out of money to finance all these properties. And so every single time it's, you know, forced us to, you know, find new ways to either find contractors, find properties, or find financing. And so far it's, we haven't slowed down yet.
That's awesome.
Great. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale,
Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Every lender loves to talk about how easy it is to get a mortgage. Then, when it's time to fund your next deal, they ask for your full financials, your blood type, your mother's famous spaghetti recipe, and a map to the Fountain of Youth. Sound familiar? You got all that handy, right? Why not switch to a lender who actually makes qualifying for a loan easy? A lender like Host Financial. Host Financial takes the tedious tax returns, endless W-2s, and time-consuming financial requests out of the picture. Their light doc and common sense underwriting guidelines mean frictionless transactions every time. You'll even be able to use the actual or projected income of the short-term or long-term rental you're looking to purchase or pull equity out of. That's what lending built for investors looks like. So take the next step and grow your portfolio faster. Visit hostfinancial.com to request a quote in as fast as 60 seconds, which is faster than this ad. If not, it's pretty close. That's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. Again, that's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com.
Well, so, you know, you're a freight train, right? You're going, you're rocking and rolling, moving forward. Why? Like, what's the goal? I should assume nothing, but are you still in the military? Are you out? Are you trying to, you know, become a bazillionaire? Are you trying to just, you know, build enough wealth to kind of live off of? What's kind of the path?
So, you know, of course, one is economic freedom, you know, or financial freedom. But mainly is, you know, causes that are more kind of like, you know, close to my heart, you know, through like deployments in different places and especially Africa, you know, you see a lot of like hunger and stuff like that. And there's a lot of issues that go on in these countries. And there are a few organizations that are actually, you know, have like former military guys like myself and, you know, who go there and try to advise the local governments and help try to, you know, combat some of these militias that are stealing food from, you know, countries in Africa. And my goal is I want to eventually get, you know, to a point where I can, my real estate empire can help fund one of these, you know, these efforts to combat, you know, hunger and, you know, the violence in a lot of these places.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's Brandon, it's not true what you were saying about him before he came on the show.
What was I saying about him?
I like this. He's a good guy. Oh, seriously. Thanks. Like thanks. You should
He's just jealous that my beard's actually nicer than his.
Yeah,
it is nicer.
Whatever. Yeah. You know, just
shorter,
you have
but nicer.
Shorter. Well, what I was doing, the No Shave November, right? And I just, now we're in December and I'm like, oh, let's just see how long I can get this thing. So my goal now
it's been
is
November for a while now.
Now we're gonna do No Shave 2017. That's what this
great.
Is. Yeah. So we'll see a year from now how I'm at. So, okay, let me jump back in here. So first of all, I love that you have that why. I think that's fantastic. And I think that is important for everyone. Like, you want something bigger than just getting rich, right? Like if that's your whole goal in life is to get rich, you'll get there with real estate, then you'll be miserable and you won't know what to do next, right? So like, I love the idea of having something a little bit bigger, and it keeps you kind of focused when you're like, you know what, this is hard work and I don't really care about getting rich that much. But instead of being like, oh, this is hard work, but there's kids dying in Africa. Well, you know, okay, I'll get back up and go do some more work. So I love that. All right, so but going back to what you said earlier about you bought some houses in really nice areas, some in kind of the middle class areas, then you bought some in, like you said, I think class D or, you know, like the really cheaper end. I want to talk about that for a little bit. What has that been like? I mean, like, have those been terrible? Have they been okay? Any evictions?
So, you know, Baltimore, you know, it has its own reputation. And, you know, it's still better than Detroit, but...
I think I saw The Wire once or twice.
Yeah. So, I actually think some of my properties are in that show.
Oh, funny.
Nice.
That's awesome.
But when you're doing these lower income, you know, houses, you know, your cash flow is, you really can't beat it. But one of the side effects of that is your analysis and due diligence that you have to perform on these houses is a lot, you know, has to be a higher degree of scrutiny. And your block to block analysis, and I mean that by block to block analysis, has to be like dead on. You have to like know these. Like you can look on a map in Zillow and Zillow can tell you the Z estimate, but that doesn't tell you anything, especially in these areas in Baltimore City. So, like, for example, there is an area that we rent majority of our Section 8 or those type properties. Not everybody is Section 8. We actually have a bunch of half of them are actually market. Actually, more majority of them are actually market tenants and not actually voucher tenants. But if we see anything on the 2,500 block or 2,400 block or even lower, we don't even touch it. But the 2,600 block, that's that 2,600, 2,800 block, that's money. And between these, it's probably a 9-block radius, 3 blocks up, 3 blocks down. It's a nice, quiet pocket.
So can you explain like the difference between in those low income areas, the quiet pockets versus the not so quiet pockets? I mean, how would somebody know the difference? How would somebody who is, you know, is willing to work in a tougher neighborhood for a potential higher return, how do they not get screwed? I invested in a tougher neighborhood and I thought I was in a quieter block and I might've been, I was 2000 miles away. I didn't know the block to block area and I didn't do so well with that. So I'd love to learn.
So one, you kind of have to drive these areas. You have to be there. You have to see it for yourself. And also different times of the day. Like if you go there, you know, noon, you know, it's, you're not really gonna be able to see much, you know, but you can tell a lot. For one is number of board ups. You know, if an entire block is boarded up, you probably want to stay away from that block, you know, or the majority of them, you know.
Why though? You go, you're an investor. You're like, I've got a whole block. I could buy this block cheap, rehab it, and get people in there. I mean, that was the thinking I had when I started to get into real estate. I was like, I saw that as real opportunity, and I think a lot of other people do. So I'd love to hear your why on that one.
So I think there's sort of this is a multifaceted answer to this question. One, you have to think about the tenant. You know, people who want to live there. Nobody wants to live next to board ups. You know, that's one thing. And then two, I don't have the resources to buy entire blocks or two entire blocks.
Got this, which, Joe.
Yeah. One day, maybe in about 2 months, but you never know. So
yeah, a couple months, maybe three.
And, you know, and this kind of goes into another thing. You know, there are people in these areas, actually not that far from where we redo the, you know, we rehab these houses and, you know, make it suitable for these tenants. You know, we have these other rehabbers who are buying these houses for $15,000 and putting $100,000 in them and then trying to sell them for anywhere from $200,000 to $300,000. And then the people that live in those areas can no longer afford to live in those areas. You know, they can't buy these houses. So, you know, they become displaced and it becomes another issue, you know, somewhere else within Baltimore. You know, we kind of go in, buy, rehab these houses. You know, I think our typical is we buy between $10,000 and $15,000, put in $20,000 to $30,000. You know, don't really spend more between purchase and rehab for $40,000 to $45,000. And it's a good house that people can appreciate and, you know, can live in who already live in that area. And one of our kind of that we like to stick to is that
it's okay.
One of the things that we'd like to, you know,
your criteria
embody when we're buying right. and rehabbing these houses, if we don't rehab a house that we wouldn't live in ourselves. You know, we don't like the idea of, you know, the kind of stigma that people get, you know, like, oh, you invest in these low income houses in Baltimore City. Well, you're a slumlord. Well, yeah. It's like we're actually trying to make the community better and not just trying to gentrify it and kick people out.
That's so great.
I hear that a lot from contractors who, like, I'll have a contractor do a job for me and I'll go in there and they'll be like, you know, there'll be something wrong, right? Like they just painted over a light switch. And I'm like, hey, you paint over a light switch. It's just a rental. It's, you know, whatever. It's just a rental. And I'm like at some point, yes, there is, you have to do different work than you're going to do on a flip on a rental property.
Yep.
And especially lower income, even if it's a flip and low income, you have to do different work, but it doesn't mean you have to do bad work or sloppy work. And I think a lot of, I don't know, people get that wrong. They just think, oh, slumlord, or you know, you're just a landlord. You don't care about quality.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want that. I mean, that's, you know, Well, at least we here at Bigger Pockets, I mean, you know, that's not what we represent, right? I mean, we want real estate investors to do the right thing. We want real estate investors to not be the used car salesman of the housing industry. You know, I mean, we want a reputation. I mean, I think it's important that we be looked at appropriately because I think we are doing a good service, at least the vast majority of real estate investors. And I love that, you know, you take such pride in what you do and you know, your approach is so methodical and meaningful. So I think it's fantastic. It's like, all right, so are you on the properties that you're keeping, are you managing them yourself or do you have a management company?
So we do about half of them manage myself. And the other half, we have property managers. And we just recently started with the property managers this past summer. And it's actually been a very bad experience. Really? We went through one property manager and then tried to, that it just didn't go very well. And then we tried to switch to another one and that actually ended up being even worse. So we're in the process of trying to go back to self-management for a bit. You know, while we kind of go back and then we'll try, our new plan is to try a property management company on an individual house and then, you know, try them out instead of giving them like six properties and then it's just not working out well. Like one had to replace a toilet and gave me an invoice for $500. Like it does not cost $500 to replace the toilet. I can get that done for like $120. Like it's just ridiculous. And they, you know, and when you ask them, because I put specifically in the contract, like, hey, I need to know before you plan to do any repairs. They're like, well, I just can't sit here and, you know, wait for you. I was like, oh, that's wrong answer. You're fired.
Yeah, that's crazy. So one, you know, crazy overcharging. What about the other one? What went wrong with them?
So they were supposed to hand over to each other. And the new property manager said that he was going to, you know, he went from door to door and, you know, hey, met all the tenants and you're like, hey, this is your new payment plan. Or, you know, this is, you're now paying us. This is how you do it. Well, the next month rolled around and every single tenant except one paid the old property manager.
Oh, man.
And then we had another house. We had bought it. It was one of these lower income houses and there was a gas problem. And when you go through the Baltimore Gas and Electric, BGE out here, that it's such a backup, and especially during going into the winter, people want to turn on their gas. Well, this one house was had to dig out the underneath the street to bring in a new gas line from one of the vacant houses next door. So the general contractor or the property manager, the new one, had just come on and he had just placed this new tenant and he told me, hey, I'll take care of it. So a month later, I was like, hey, how's everything going? I know this takes a while. And he's like, well, I haven't even submitted the paperwork. I haven't even gotten a pressure test. And he's like, I don't even remember that. And I was like, okay. And then we started it and then it came down to it. If I remember this correctly, he thought there was an issue with the chimney. And my general contractor came in and even signed a paper saying, hey, no, the chimney's fine. I actually did it myself. And he's like, and I went back to him and he's like, okay, so let's start the process of the BGE. Let's get the inspection. Let's get them out there. It can take a month, month and a half for them to get out here once it's actually been inspected. And he's like, well, I just don't feel comfortable doing it. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay. So I ended up doing it myself. And it took a month and a half and to actually get the gas turned on in this house.
That's crazy. So I've experienced the same thing as you have when I was working in low income properties with management. It was the same thing, one ripping me off on everything from on rehabs, you know, another one not contacting, not taking care of people, another one not screening tenants the way they're supposed to. I mean, absolute nightmare. So you know, that's why we press upon so strongly to people to do your diligence on looking for property managers and making sure to get out there and interview them as much as possible. We've got a couple articles, great articles on the topic on how to screen property managers. We'll link to those in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show206. What advice do you have? I mean, given those experiences beyond just those interviews, do you have any feedback or advice for folks on what to avoid potentially in those screenings, looking back, you know, maybe?
It's kind of hard because both of these property managers were on a list that was like pushed out as like top 10 property managers in Baltimore, which is, you know, obviously not saying much.
Yeah.
But You know, one, you know, making sure, you know, putting in the contract, like some of these guys will sneak in, you know, certain things in the contract, like, hey, you have to have us for a year. You know, I would say if you're trying a new property manager, you know, make that a trial period, you know, maybe a few months instead of a whole year, and then staying on top of them and making sure that they're doing exactly what they say they're doing. And, you know, make sure, you know, especially at the beginning portion, that any repairs or anything like that, you should be consulted by you. And then once you feel comfortable, then you can sort of let them go on autopilot and just not really, you know, to have to over, you know, micromanage them as much. So
Makes sense. Good feedback.
Yeah. All right. So kind of one of my last questions here. How are you finding properties? Like there's a lot of properties to find, especially when you're still working and involved in military and all that. How do you do that?
So we actually, I actually find majority of them, almost all of them, but a majority of them on the MLS and Zillow. And this is one of the things that about Baltimore and Baltimore City, to be exact. So everybody around here is like scared of the city. They're, you know, even people who live just outside the city in the county, you know, I've run into contractors, investors, and I'll be like, I mean, a property manager, contractor, and be like, hey, you know, I'd like to do business. It's like, okay, great. You know, I'd love to, you know, I like working with investors. And I'm like, well, he's like, where are your properties? I'm in Baltimore City. He's like, nope, sorry, I don't do that. I don't go in there. And one of the things that comes to our advantage is that people are scared, you know, either whether it's, you know, because of the high property taxes, you know, the high utility bills, the tenant friendly laws, and, you know, even its reputation from, you know, the riots, you know, the other year. And actually, a little side note, I was actually in my very first RIA meeting when the city declared a state of emergency, and we actually got kicked out of the RIA meeting because of the Freddie Gray riot. And actually, we ended up going back to my house and actually could see the fire from my house. Oh, wow. And ended up purchasing some houses not that far from those fires. So, but because of this, you know, I really don't have that much there really isn't that much competition, because I've went out in the county and I've even done some deals in DC. And you go from, you know, like any property in DC is going to have 20 to 30 different people competing for that offer. You know, maybe the county, maybe it's a little bit less, but you're looking at 10 to 15. Maybe Baltimore City, you're looking at three, you know, other people trying to compete. And especially if you're in these kind of like not as well known areas, or the already established, hey, this is a good area. You know, one of the things I look for is these like kind of like fringe areas, you know, these developing areas as people's, you know, things are going on. And we're been able to find almost all our deals on Zillow, and still to this day.
Cool.
But, you know, I probably put in like a couple offers every day. Like everything I see, you know, almost any house is a deal if you get it for the right price. So I pretty much put an offer on everything that I see. And, you know, they're all embarrassing low, and most of them don't come back at all. But, you know, we occasionally get some, and we're even surprised.
What does your agent say about that? How do they feel about submitting all these really, really low offers that they know the odds are really slim? Because a lot of agents, I think, would say F off.
Yeah. So my real estate agent, Carrie Walling, at the beginning, I don't think she was quite the fan of it. And then she was able to develop a streamlined process for her through her kind of like her systems and how she does things, to where that she was able to start pumping out offers instead of individually writing each one. So she ended up fixing her own problem, you know, and still accommodating me. And she's been a huge part to my success.
Yeah. Nice. I love that. You know, on every single week, you know, I host the Bigger Pockets webinar usually on Wednesdays. And one of the things I say over and over and over, I talk about this funnel. Like, if you want to buy more deals, you have to make more offers. If you want to make more offers, you've got to analyze more deals. If you want to analyze more deals, you got to get more leads coming in, you know, figure out your lead source. If you just get those four parts of the funnel down, you're going to do all right. And I think you're like a perfect testament to that. You're making offers. And yeah, a lot of them are going to get it rejected, but that's okay. There's always somebody else who's going to say yes. That's fantastic. Yeah. So,
by the way, you can track and manage everything Brandon just talked about on Bigger Pockets. We've got tools for all of that. So check it out at biggerpockets/analysis. Hey, so Joe, I've got one last question before you move to the fire round. You know, you're a guy who started doing all this while you were active duty in the military. We actually wrote a piece, Brandon wrote it. It's called Investing in American Real Estate While Serving in the U.S. Military. We'll link to that in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/206. But what would you tell your peers in the military who are you know, thinking about, hey, you know, I know there's ways I can, you know, be making some money and doing some of this other stuff while I'm serving abroad or even at home, just, you know, in different bases around the country. What kind of advice would you give to those guys who are like, I don't know, it's going to be too hard, or, you know, have complaints, excuses, that kind of stuff?
You know, it's...
Or are scared.
Yeah. Well, what I say is really one of my favorite quotes is actually by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he says, it's important to have fun in life, of course. But when you're out there partying, horsing around somewhere out there at the same time, someone is working hard, someone is getting smarter, and someone is winning. And for the longest time, like, I was, you know, probably your typical military guy. I just, you know, when I was home, I just had fun. But, you know, it's what you do in your free time, you know, that really denotes your success. You know, especially if you have a full-time position. And even when you're deployed and you have very little time, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to go off, you know, play video games. You know, you can do a lot of different things. But, you know, at the end of the day, what are you working towards and how are you spending your time?
I love it. That's a great quote from a real estate investor, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, too bad we can't get him. We got to get him on the show.
Yeah, if anybody's got a connection to Arnold, you know, and wants to help us get him on the show, we'd love that.
That would be pretty great. So I have one last question before I head to the fire round. A few times you've said, Sue said, we. I'm wondering, are you still working with that girlfriend or ex-girlfriend now, or are you have different partners? Are you doing this alone? How's that work?
Yes, yes, and yes. So we still do. And actually, funny thing. So when I went to Iraq and then came back, and then we were there home for 2 months, she took leave, came back, and then she went to Iraq after that. And then I was back here doing a lot of the property management. And then I actually went on 2 other deployments, as well as a bunch of personal trips on the, you know, throughout the world. So we almost the entire time, we've never been in the exact same place. But then I started doing, partnering up with one of my buddies from my former unit. His name is Ben Smith, and he's the guy who is a rehabber and just amazing experience. And you know, we've partnered together and been able to, you know, make so many deals happen that without the partnership probably would never have happened. And I'm always looking for more partnerships. Another guy I work with, we're actually starting our first properties together, and we're actually closing on 2 at the same time on December 23rd.
Nice.
Yeah,
so that's awesome.
Day before, nice. So Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas.
Exactly.
Wait to make awesome. That up.
Early Christmas.
You like that? Yeah, early Christmas presents. Very cool. All right, well, hey, let's shift gears here a little bit and head over to the world famous fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
These questions come direct out of the Bigger Pockets forums, which our listeners can get to by going to biggerpockets.com/forums. So question number 1 from the forums. I'm in the military and unsure how to get into real estate investing. What should be my first step?
First step would be education. You know, as much as you can talk about will to, you know, to get just jump right in, but you should spend some time learning the basics, kind of figure out what you want your niche to be, whether it's rehabbing, you know, buy and holds, wholesaling, and do as much education as you can. But don't sit there and, you know, be frozen by, you know, as a paralysis by analysis. But you know, eventually you need to jump in, but start with that education. And then once you get to a good point, just go ahead and jump in and, you know, see where you go.
Nice.
Love it.
All right, next question. I was wondering how I could go about renting one house to multiple people. Would I have to make one person the head of the household, or could I simply collect rent from each person individually?
It's a good question. It kind of depends on exactly how you want to do it. Probably the best way to do it is to get, you know, everybody like on the lease and, you know, collect it from one person. But if you're not able to do that, and if you're managing individual rooms, like I was at the time, we just manage a room, someone come in, someone would come out, and then just collect money from them individually. So, but funny side note is I actually have no longer house hacking this house. I'm actually put it up on Airbnb. And nice. Just had my first guests come in last week, and then the next ones come in next 2 days.
How'd they go?
It went well. I got a 5-star rating.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Told you, cool. Brandon. It's not true. All right. 5 stars, this guy.
5 stars. Number 3, when you don't have money.
That's happened.
When you don't have any money, how do you fund a fixer-upper with the goal of being able to hold it and rent it? In other words, how do you do a BRRRR when you don't have any money?
So one of, you know, the easiest way to do it is to obviously try to find a family member, you know, private investing. Anything past that, you know, it becomes difficult because even hard money lenders who will be, you know, the quickest to give you a loan, even if you don't have experience, depending on who you're talking to, you're still going to require 20% down. So it's difficult, but, you know, private money is your probably best chance of going in with no money and getting a loan for the rehab and the purchase.
There you go.
Cool. Our last question of the fire round. When analyzing deals, how do I determine how much I should rent a property out for?
So anytime that I have a question on whether or not, or whether it's a rental comp or an ARV comp, I'm a firm believer that there are, you know, you can try to do everything or you can delegate to the experts. And so at this point, I would always, if I have a question, you know, because Zillow and all those other different websites, they can be off, but the person who knows best are the experts. And so this is where I would then pose that question to my real estate agent, and then she'd fire back with either rental comps or ARV comps. And that's pretty much how we get that done. And I don't even try to bother getting in someone else's lane that knows way better than I do.
Sure.
Cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, let's shift gears to the final segment of the show, which we lovingly call our
Famous Four.
All right. These are the four questions we ask every guest. And I know you've heard a lot of our shows and so you know what's coming. Number one, what is your favorite real estate related book?
You know, I actually really do hate to say this just because it's you, but I would have to say the book on rental property investing by Brandon Woo-hoo! Turner was probably, you know, as you sort of watch these podcasts, you sort of over time, you kind of like, oh, you know, maybe I could be on there one day. And you start thinking about, hey, what would be my answer and stuff like that. And as I've read books, I'm like, oh, this is my new answer. You know, I'd be like, oh, when I, you know, I really like Jay Scott's book and stuff, but you know, what I really got out of that book was just kind of like a whole approach just to just the whole concept of, you know, rentals and BRRRRs and stuff like that. And just Thanks. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Sorry.
My head's a little bigger now.
No, don't be sorry, because now we have to put up with his crap.
You do.
Oh, God, this guy.
I'm going to make Josh support it even more. Josh, where can people find that book?
Do I have to?
You have to. You have to. Support the mission of Bigger Pockets.
Go to biggerpockets.com/rentalbook. It is a great book. Thanks. And I think it's fantastic, or I wouldn't be publishing it. However, he just doesn't need any more of an ego than he already has. Done, Joe. Nicely done.
See, I just read that book, Ryan Holiday's book, Ego is the Enemy. So I depressed my ego. So I need to build it back up again right now. Because right now I'm an idiot, so I need to build it back up. So thank you, Joe, for
chanting. You could keep chanting that.
I will.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Joe, favorite business book, non-real.
So my favorite business books. This also kind of like evolved as I'm writing, but you know, originally for a while I thought it was like the one thing, but I just recently read The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone, and you know, I think that book is amazing.
Yeah.
Just his whole concept of, you know, massive action, massive success through massive action is just sort of like how I try to model a lot of everything that I do in my life now. So,
cool. What do you do for fun outside of real estate these days?
So I would say probably like three things is one is I like to travel. Probably I went on like six different trips last 10 months.
Oh, wow.
To 11 different countries, including the Olympics. I like to skydive. Probably there's nothing more exhilarating than jumping out of an airplane. And then, strange enough, in the last few months, I started playing polo. And
Like Marco Polo or like
water polo?
No. Actually, I did play water polo in high school, but no, it's actually polo with horses.
Like a horse.
Yeah, and a stick.
My name is Joe England. I'm going to go ride my polo horse now.
That's awesome. I don't know.
Is cool.
I've never met anyone in my life who played polo.
Sounds like a very difficult sport, by the way.
Yeah, it's very fast and actually very surprisingly aggressive. You know, a lot of it is, just like go run around hitting the ball, but a lot of it is actually you riding other people's horses off with your horse. So it's kind of like
you trying to knock them off their horses?
No, you try to drive, use your horse to drive their horse off the path of the ball, you know, it might even cut them off into the wall, stuff like that.
Nice.
Wow.
Well, that's
like modern day jousting or something like that.
All right, next Bigger Pockets conference, we should have a polo tournament. Everyone bring their horses, and you know, it'll be fun.
That's awesome. Pretty cool, man. That's pretty cool.
Cool. By, what's your favorite country you visited out of those 11?
Brazil was amazing, but I have to say one of my favorite trip, you know, outside of that was went to Tromsø, Norway, which is a town in the within the Arctic Circle, the very northern part of Norway. Went up there with a buddy of mine and went dog sledding, chased the northern lights, and actually went snowmobiling up in the kind of like their Norwegian Alps up there, and did all that in 3 days. And
wow,
that was awesome.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Cool. All right. Well, my last question of the day. Joe, what do you believe sets apart successful investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
So I think one is to have passion for something. It goes passion, I think, to be good at something. And if you really want to be truly great at something, you need to have an obsession. To be truly great at anything, you have to be obsessed with it. And then that has to be followed by massive action.
I like it.
I love it.
I like it.
Sounds like Grant Cardone. Sure. You've been listening to a little Grant Cardone.
Yeah. Drinking the juice.
Yeah.
Hey, like, man, before we let you go, where can people find out more about you if they want to reach out and get in touch?
You can either hit me up on BP or email me at jde@vikingpropertysolutions.net. And that will be the best way to reach me until I finally get my website up.
Did you say Viking? Like
vikingpropertysolutions.net.
Get your head any bigger, Brandon.
No, I was going to say, are you Norwegian? Is that the Norwegian trip? Are you a Viking? You kind of look like
it was a thing before it. So
okay.
It only reinforced.
Nice.
You know.
Do you like krumkaka?
I don't know what that is.
They're Norwegian cookies.
I'm Norwegian. I've never had that. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're Norwegian cookies. Krumkaka. Yeah. Whatever. Wow. Nobody knows.
Whatever.
All right, Joe. Listen, man, it's been a pleasure having you, man. Astounded by your success. You're doing fantastic things. I love the attitude. I love the mentality. I love how you're out there just killing it. So congrats to you. Kudos on everything you've been able to accomplish. And thank you so much for being on the podcast. We really do appreciate it. And obviously, we'll look forward to seeing you around the Bigger Pockets community. And all the good folks in Baltimore should look forward to seeing you blow that place up, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Hopefully not blow it up too much.
Yeah, blow it up in a good way.
Not in a bad way. Yes, obviously. Yes.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks. Take care.
Hey, take care. All right, guys, that was Joe England. Big thanks to Joe for coming on the show. Great stuff, man.
That's great. You know what's interesting? As I was talking to him, this has nothing to do with real estate whatsoever. I just couldn't help but every time I looked at him, I thought I was talking to Captain America. Like he looks like Chris Evans from, the Captain America. He's got like the kind of the hair and the build, the military presence. I don't know.
I thank God for guys like him because I'm scrawny.
I know.
Well, you're tall and scrawny.
I'm tall and scrawny, and
I don't know. yoked guys who are out there, saving our, protecting our country, protecting other people, protecting innocent people around the world, and doing good. I mean, it's amazing. So, big props to Joe and everybody in the Army and the armed forces here in the U.S. That's doing great things for people. We definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. But awesome show anyway. I mean, I love his creativity. I love his drive. I love his the massive action that he's. I mean, like he perfectly. Yeah. That perfectly exemplifies his show. It's just massive action. Like he's just like, I'm going to go look at 40 houses on my 2 week break. And it's crazy. I love it.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing for Christmas this year?
What am I doing for Christmas?
This is Rosie's first Christmas.
This is Rosie's first Christmas. So, taking a lot of pictures, going to get a tree today. I just got back from Phoenix where I was hanging out with my good buddy, Ben Leibovich and Serge Shukat, two veterans of the Bigger Pockets podcast. Both been on three times, but we sat outside a restaurant and talked real estate for like 3 hours.
Nice.
Yeah, good stuff.
Can't get enough of those guys, can you?
I can't get enough of those guys. It was a great, great weekend. And
it's awesome.
Yeah, talking real estate. Just networking. It's fun.
Cool. Hanging out. I love it.
What about you? What are you doing for the holiday, Christmas,
the Hanukkah holiday. Well, we've got my... When this thing happened with my dad, it was here in Denver. And so my parents are actually here with us. We were supposed to go to California. And I don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know if I'm going to be here in Denver. I don't know if I'm going to be in California with my wife's family. I'm not sure. what it's going to look like. But, you know, we'll be around family and we'll be doing our thing.
There you go. Well, have fun.
Well, happy holidays to everybody. We really do appreciate all your support. We appreciate you guys for listening and being a part of the Bigger Pockets community. If you're not already a member of Bigger Pockets, jump on the site, biggerpockets.com. Create your free account today. I talked about in the show some of the tools that we have, our analysis tools, our calculators. You know, we've been building out a lead manager. We're building out lots of different tools to help real estate investors manage their business and scale and build their businesses up. So if you haven't yet explored that stuff, jump on Bigger Pockets, check out the different tools on there. And yeah, get in there and create your free account, start networking, building up your team and your knowledge and get out there and make it happen. Don't just wait till January and make it your New Year's resolution. Hey, I'm gonna get rich next year. I'm gonna, you know, make money. I'm gonna, you know, plan to retire. I'm gonna quit my job or whatever your purpose, your reason for listening to us now is. Don't wait. You know, get started right now and commit to yourself to make things happen because life is short. At the end of the day, and you got to make it happen. So with that, thank you. Thank you again, Brandon. Great, you know, great having you on the show. Great being on the show again. You
thank
know,
you.
Great doing this. And
it's good to have you back.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. To everyone else, we'll see you next week. Happy holidays. And I'm Josh Dorkin signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.